Hello, hello. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our another Instagram Live with Brutal Iron Jim. So we're going to be doing these every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. So I am very fortunate enough that I get to work with people all across the country and actually over in Europe as well. So I think hopefully with the Eastern Standard Time, it makes sure everybody's on the same page. So thank you for checking in. Actually, today what we're going to be doing is I'm actually pairing this with our podcast. So those of you who are listening on the podcast, this is actually podcast number 653. So those of you looking on Instagram Live, I've actually done 653 daily podcasts, which is a little bit crazy, but I enjoy it a lot. So the topic that's going to be for the podcast is trainer education, and I wanted to just kind of share what the what these Instagram Live sessions were like, so that way trainers could check in and see an option of what we do for giving out information and kind of connecting out there with the world. So hopefully, if they're listening to the podcast, they can learn what one of these sessions would be like and maybe check in if they wanted to, but it would give a kind of like a little insight into the process. So those of you listening on Instagram Live, we do have our podcast that we do every day, and I'm at, like I said, 653 of these things, and we cycle through four topics, being training, nutrition, mindset, and trainer education. So I'm very fortunate, very blessed. I get to work with a lot of trainers. So actually half of my clients are personal trainers, and I do a lot of trainer counseling and trainer education. So when I taught at the university level, I actually taught for 7.5 years. And within that 7.5 year span, I took 500 plus students through a trainer kind of development course where we taught them how to do nutrition programs for either like building muscle or losing fat, and actually training programs for building muscle and losing fat. So that was super duper fun. Every student who stuck with it really enjoyed it. It was a lot of work for a class, but it was really good learning lessons that they got to keep for the rest of their life. A lot of those students then turned into trainers. I've actually stayed in touch with them a lot. I have one of my old clients, they are over in China teaching people how to lift weights in China, which is freaking cool. So I've had a lot of fun doing that, very blessed in that way. But that's why one of the four topics is trainer education, because I do work with so many trainers. So I wanted to thank everybody who checks in on the podcast. Thank you for doing that. We average over 1,000 downloads a week, which is pretty cool. And thank you for those checking in on Instagram Live. So we've been getting more and more views with people checking in even after the Instagram Live is posted. So if you're in that category and you're checking out after the fact, you're welcome to always email us questions and just kind of check in with us, and we'll either discuss them or answer the questions in the Instagram Live sessions, and or we'll make a podcast about it. So we had somebody recently kind of reach out in the Instagram Live session. They asked about nutrition information, nutrition questions in regards to the Whole 30 diet. I was able to give some answers in the Instagram Live session, but then I went ahead and made an entire podcast about it as well. So that way they got really good information. So it's helpful for me to know what everybody wants to learn about. And then it's also helpful in the sense that once I know, I can help, I can give the information. So thank you for those who are sending in questions. We even had a question about how to breathe during exercise. So we made a podcast about that as well. So I appreciate the interaction. I appreciate the support. It's been a lot of fun just kind of getting to interact with people and cover a wide variety of topics. That's one of my favorite things when I go out in public speaking and go to like schools or community events or businesses. I even recently went to a drug addiction center, and we started talking about just learning how to be more addicted to exercise than drugs. So it was a lot of fun, and I love that kind of Q&A open format. So thank you to everybody who checks in and on the podcast and Instagram Live. I appreciate it all very, very much. And I hope that through the access that we are giving in terms of information, you're able to get the information that you want and need. So I've been a personal trainer now for 18 years, worked with over 2,000 clients, I have a bachelor's in health and phys ed, a master's in nutrition, personal training certification through American College of Sports Medicine. I have a corrective exercise specialist certification through NASM, National Academy of Sports Medicine. So I have a lot of formal education, and with over 2,000 clients and 500 plus students, I have a lot of real world education as well. So I have a lot of things rattling up in here, and I think they're useful for everybody else. So I appreciate when people participate and ask questions. It's super fun. So there's no point in having all this stuff in my head. I want to put it in yours. So what we want to do is today I'm just going to start talking through some topics and questions that have come up with my in-person clients and online clients. And I thought it would just be some good general information. And then people are welcome to send in any questions they have along the way. Well, what do you know? Isn't that perfect timing? We just got a question. So, if a person has a hump at the base of their neck on their seventh vertebra, are there any exercises or anything they can do to improve that area? Yes, that hump that happens is often associated, it's pretty much at the base of the neck. The seventh vertebra is like right here at the base of the neck, and it's typically when somebody has really bad posture. So if they're always like hunched forward, so if you're looking at them from the front, let me back up a little bit so you can see my shoulders, they would have a very forward sloped position. And if you're looking at it from the side, instead of being upright, they were like this. And their neck is usually like protruding forward. And that creates a lot of stress across the structures of those vertebra. And you can actually get kind of a hump effect. And there are some things you can do to combat that. It depends on how long it's been there. That'll factor into how long it takes to get rid of it. But really, the best things you can do is to correct posture. So you have to typically strengthen the upper back. And that would include the upper traps, lower traps, rhomboids, even like teres major and some other muscles that are associated with shoulder blade positioning. And you can do that through, well, actually, you want to probably try to create some motion there, as well as trying to strengthen. So there's kind of a couple factors here. Number one is things called scapular retractions. You can YouTube that. There are a bajillion variations. You can email us. Our email is brutalirongym@gmail.com, and I can send you the type of scapular retraction movements that I prescribe to clients. So you want to do scapular retraction movements. That will make the person more aware of their shoulder blade positioning, and they can correct their position. Once they are aware of how to move their shoulder blades, you would then put some weight on them. And you can do that with what would be considered horizontal shrugs. So you can actually get on a seated row machine, grab the handles, and instead of pulling like with your back and then your arms, just leave your arms extended and just do the shrug part like this. So that's really pretty easy. You can do that on a cable seated machine, seated row. You can do that with bands at home. Just any kind of way that you can weight a horizontal shrug and make sure that their shoulders, when they're doing it, their shoulders don't lift up. Okay? The shoulders should stay down, kind of almost like in a flat plane of motion. So I'm actually working with a rugby player right now who has similar issues, and we're going through videos that we share back and forth. He's up in Pennsylvania, and I watch the videos and give him corrective feedback. And one of the things that is very common is people over relying on their upper trap and not their lower trap and rhomboid area. So make sure the shoulders stay down, the neck stays kind of long when they're doing those motions. So scapular retractions help open up movement in the shoulder blades. Any kind of weighted horizontal shrug motion is going to help strengthen that movement, so therefore it stays. Another thing you absolutely have to address is tightness on the front side of the body. So they're going to have tightness in their upper outer chest, and that's going to include their chest major. And their like there's pectoralis is the fancy word for chest. So it includes the pectoralis major and pec minor. So you want to make sure that you do mobility work and some kind of internal external rotation, some type of compression therapy to kind of open that up. You can check out Travis Bachmeier's YouTube channel called Smashworks, SmashWeRX, and he has a bunch of things on there. Kelly Sturette from Mobility Wad has a bunch of things on there. Just any kind of therapies that are going to open up shoulder positioning from the front side. So that way, as you're trying to move everything on the back side, there's not this tugging force negating everything you're trying to do. So, scapular retractions, strengthen shoulder blade movement, and then you want to get into opening up the front side of the shoulder. Those three things are going to make a big difference. And then nutrition, that's going to help a lot, just to kind of lose some body fat and help provide enough nutrition for the strengthening process of the upper back. So you want to make sure they follow good nutritional guidelines. If you don't know what those are, check out our podcast. We have 4 million podcasts on nutrition. Email me at brutalirongym@gmail.com and I'll send you the direct link. You can also just search for Brutal Iron Gym on any major podcast platform. We have a ton of nutritional resources out there. But you want to look for protein content of about 0.6 grams per pound of body weight as a minimum. If you don't know what that means, then you got to email me and figure out some more. But if they weigh, you know, 150 pounds, 100 pounds would be 60 grams. Okay, so 150 pounds would be 90 grams of protein. So if they weigh around 150 pounds, they should be getting around 90 grams of protein. And that means that as you're damaging those tissues of the upper back to strengthen them with band and corrective weighted exercises, there's enough nutrition to make the adaptations and changes that you want. So when we train, we are stimulating the possibility of change. We have to then sleep and eat to actually make that change happen. So while you are training, you are not actually creating benefit. You are creating the stimulus for benefit. So that's something you want to get across them as well. So hopefully that was helpful. The area, you can, like, massaging the area doesn't really help. Icing it won't really make a difference. Really just working on corrective posture, good nutrition, so that way they have the nutrition needed to adapt to the training, and then also just mindfulness. So when I was younger, I actually trained myself to get rid of a foot out, like feet out walking stance. I didn't like the way it looked, and it had to do with weak hips and bad posture. But at the time, I just thought it made me look like a dork, so I didn't like it. So I took my entire 11th grade year of high school to teach myself how to walk with my feet straight. I even put notes on like my little binder that I carry around everywhere. It was something that I made sure I did. Even when I was sitting in class, my feet were straight. When I walked between classes, my feet were straight. And I taught myself in 9 months of school how to walk with my feet straight, and it's stayed ever since. So they'll have to do the same thing with their posture. And you can think of pinching something between the shoulder blades, and that will pull their shoulders back. If it's a female, often they'll sometimes have a negative worry or a fear or a concern about kind of like pushing their chest out there. And it is just good. It is good posture. So that is something I've actually ran into with clients in the past, is they have kind of just a mental emotional block about that positioning. So just trying to make sure that they feel proud in that position, helping them lose weight, will give them more self-confidence. Even just the act of being proactive against the problem, making sure they're doing well with their accountability and staying active towards it, will improve confidence. So typically that downward posture, not only is it associated with physical limitations, but also emotional, mental kind of concerns. So Jordan Peterson had a great book called The 12 Rules to Live By, and one of his rules was to stand tall. And it had not only to do with good physical health and good posture, but also good mental health, feeling confident, believing in oneself. And there's a lot of physiological benefits to standing tall and standing proud. So that's probably way too much information compared to what you were looking for, but that's a good kind of place to start and some information to use. Great. So thank you for submitting the question. Anybody else wants to send any questions, you're absolutely welcome to. I have gotten a couple messages while I've been talking on Instagram from people. You're welcome. Thank you for submitting the question. I don't know how to check the Instagram messages without knocking myself off of Instagram Live. So I apologize if you're sending any messages on Instagram right now. I won't be able to check those. You can send them in an email, brutalirongym@gmail.com, and I can check that. If it's nothing that you needed during the session, I promise I'll check the messages afterwards and get back to you. Cool. Okay. So, this is my brain when I get a question. Is it's super fun, and I like rattling off answers, and hopefully that stuff is helpful. So I'll continue to go ahead and move down through some of the things I had planned to talk about. But again, if anybody has a question, you're welcome to throw it out there. I want to make sure that whatever we're talking about is helpful to you. Cool. So one of the things that came up with a client of mine in person, and then it also related to another question I had with an online client, was the concept of how to create muscle damage. So again, remember, when we're in training, what we're actually doing when we're in the gym is creating the stimulus that'll produce the change. It's sleep and food that actually creates the change, allows the body to make the adaptations to the stimulus of the training. So it's really important that we keep saying that and we keep kind of remembering that, because too often people train hard, then they eat like a dumbass, and they don't sleep. So that happens all the time. So your food and your sleep have to support your training. So they all have to work together. So it's important that we know that. So when we're thinking of muscle damage, when we're in the gym, we actually do want to damage muscle tissue. And this is if we want the muscle tissue to change shape, if we want it to get bigger, if we want it to get stronger. There is muscle damage effects in strength, even though that's more of a neurological process. But there is muscle damage process. When you're looking at getting stronger, you have to have, like, having bigger muscles does lead towards increased strength. You don't have to have big muscles to be strong, but it helps in the process. So when we're looking for muscle shape change and or muscle growth, you have to create muscle damage when you're in training. So one of the things people do way too often, and they do it wrong, is they're in the gym, they're active, they're moving things around, they're doing circuits of this and that and all this craziness, but they're never actually lifting anything heavy enough or challenging enough to create muscle damage. So there's a degree of us being uncomfortable when we train, which is yay, but we have to actually be beyond a comfortable uncomfortable. Meaning that if I go into the gym and I feel kind of the same level of challenge every time I go into the gym, it's the same this month, next month, next month, next month, next month. And in 6 months to a year, I'm really kind of just lifting the same weights, doing the same volume, doing the same exercises. If I'm doing the same, I will become and stay the same. So the same gets the same. So we have to progressively push ourselves when we're in the gym. So we have to create some muscle damage. So two ways that we create muscle damage when we're in the gym. Number one is sheer force, meaning I lift something so heavy that it pulls and tears at the muscle structures. Sounds dangerous, but it's actually really good. It helps get the shape changes and the growth that we want. But that is one way of doing it, sheer force. And how you basically can feel that and know if you're experiencing that is, while you are lifting, your brain is going to tell your muscles, move that thing. Your muscles are going to go ahead and move that thing. All of a sudden, you get to a weight or you get to a rep range, and your brain says, move that thing, and your muscles go, crap, I can't. So, and you're like, and straining and straining and straining, but you can't move it. That is sheer force effect. It's not that the muscle's burning so bad that you have to stop. It's just simply that you cannot move the thing anymore. That typically is a sign that there's enough muscular damage and stress, along with some metabolic stress and some other processes that we're not mentioning. They're there, but they're not part of the equation of what we're trying to figure out. But when we tell the muscles to move in the brain and the muscles can't, that's a sign of sheer force. So that's one way. I just simply can't move it anymore. Another way of creating muscle damage is what's generally termed metabolic damage. And this means you ask your muscles to do a volume of workload compared to the weight you're using, and it cannot keep up. So I can run 1 mile. Well, actually, that's probably debatable. But somebody can run 1 mile. They can run maybe 5 miles. Can they run 10? Can they run 15? Can they run 20? So somebody may be fit enough to run 5 miles, but they're not fit enough to run 10 miles. That's kind of what we're doing to our muscles. We're asking them to do a workload that's above what their fitness is. If we do that, what you typically feel is a burning sensation in the muscle. The muscle will burn, and you're going to say, holy freaking crap, this is really uncomfortable, I need to stop. Those are typically the two things we're looking for. One of the other reasons why people will sometimes stop an exercise is because they can't breathe. That means you're doing cardio. So if you have to stop a movement because you can't breathe, then that means your maximal stimulus is to your cardiovascular system, and you're actually doing cardio training, not muscle training. Now, can you mix in muscle training and cardio? Oh, hell yes. But you want the limiting factor to be what your main goal is. So I might be a lot of out of breath by the time my muscles burn so bad that I have to stop. But I want to make sure that if my goal is muscle change, muscle shape change, or muscle size change, that it should be the muscles are the reasons why I stop, not because I can't breathe. So it's important that we kind of combine all this and understand that what's the limiting factor may better be what our goal is. So all that is to say, that's what we do when we're in the gym. We're either looking for shear force damage or we're looking for metabolic damage. So that's what you need to look for and make sure that you're doing. So if you stop exercises before you just physically can't stop moving, or before it burns so bad you have to actually stop because it burns so bad, you just stop because it kind of sort of got hard, that is not good enough. So you do have to push yourself. And this is actually more important on people who are weaker and newer to training. As you become more intermediate and advanced, you don't actually have to push every single set that difficult or that much into failure, that much into a kind of a challenge, because the thing you're moving is already so dang heavy that it's creating a lot of damage. So for example, somebody squatting 500 pounds for 5 reps, but they really could have done 6 or 7, it still creates way more damage than somebody who squats 150 pounds for 5 reps, but they could have done 6 or 7. So as you get stronger, you actually don't need to push yourself as much into muscular stress and muscular challenge. But that's something we want to be aware of when we're in the gym. Are you stopping an exercise because you physically can't move it anymore? Are you stopping an exercise because there's so much burning pain that it's too uncomfortable and you can't continue? Or are you stopping an exercise just because it kind of sort of got difficult? If it's the last one, that's not good enough. You got to push yourself a little bit. So one of the techniques you can use to do that is a rest-pause technique. So if you typically do, say, a set of 12 reps, and now you're wondering, crap, I wonder if I should be trying harder. Well, you can try as many reps as you can in a singular bout of effort. We consider that normally a set, so a set of 12. And I can try as many as I can. Maybe I get 12, maybe I get 13. We would typically then rest the weight that we're using, and we would take a rest period. And that rest period might be 1 minute, 2 minutes, whatever it is for you. A rest pause technique means instead of taking a full rest, we're going to take a shortened rest. So I'm going to do my first bout of effort for as many reps as I can. Maybe it's 12, maybe it's 13, maybe it's 14. I'm going to rest the weight. I'm going to pause, but I'm only going to pause for maybe up to 5 seconds. Depends on the exercise. Anywhere from 1 second to 20 seconds is actually kind of appropriate. If it's a big movement, you want to rest more closer to 20 seconds. That's like squats, deadlifts, leg press, hack squats, stuff like that. If it's a small movement or small muscle like lateral raises, bicep curls, then it should be a shorter rest period. But rest somewhere between 1 and 20 seconds. Pick the weight back up and go again. So you have your first bout of exercise. You have a small rest and then a second bout of exercise. This is a way to challenge your muscles because they're not used to that short rest period. So they're used to these big, long rest periods that we normally take. So that, by simply shortening the rest period, is a way to shock your body into more growth. So I might try an exercise, I get 12 reps, I rest the weight for 5 seconds, pick it right back up, I try again, I only get 3 or 4. Well, that's 3 or 4 more reps than you would have normally done. And that's a way to push yourself more into stress and therefore get more results. So that's something to try, something to think of, is in your workouts, are you failing, are you stopping, I guess, because you can't move it, because it burns so bad, or just kind of sort of got difficult. So if it's the last one, try some rest pause technique, and maybe that'll get you some extra results. It actually will. I know it will because it works every time. So give that a try. Okay, cool. Now, I'm going to keep yapping. If anybody has a question, feel free to throw it out there. Another thing that I was talking about with somebody was the effects of food complexity on aesthetics and cravings. We were talking about the difference of digestion rates in foods and how that influenced how we felt throughout the day. So if I'm eating a meal at, say, 9 a.m., and I'm planning for it to, well, let's go with something more common. Let's say somebody's having breakfast at 8 in the morning, and then they're not going to have lunch till 12. Well, if we were looking to just kind of be optimal health, like in the sense of like, I want to build some muscle, I want to lose some fat, I just kind of want to be generally my best self, We're not trying to hyper-focus on fat loss. We're not trying to hyper-focus on muscle building. We just want to be healthy, build a little bit of muscle, get a little bit of fat off, just kind of in that realm. Then you would want a meal that's going to last you until 12. So 8 o'clock in the morning, you'll eat. You want those calories and foods and everything to last till 12. But at 12, there really should be none of that left over. Then, when you eat at 12, your body will use the food at 12 as fuel to get you to the next meal. So there's no overlap, there's no carryover that then might end up having us have too many calories at one time, which leads to fat storage, or there's not like a huge drop-off, and then we have a huge span of nothing, which then freaks the body out. And then when you do eat at 12, the body tries to save some of that as fat loss. I mean, as body fat. So our main goal with nutrition is I want to eat one meal that lasts me until the next meal. Then I eat the next meal that lasts me until the next meal. So we just kind of want to go through the day, kind of like if we were thinking about driving a car, I want to put enough gas in my car, okay, to drive to the next gas station. But by the time I reach the next gas station, I should be empty. Then I put gas at that gas station in, but just enough gas to get me to the next gas station. So that's typically what we want to think of, or an analogy or whatever, for how we want to eat throughout the day. We want to give just enough energy for our body to get to the next meal. Now, we typically, when most people look at diets and have their eating right, they are either going to look at calories or they're going to look at quality of food. And that is important. It has a lot of importance. However, there's things other than that. So one of the big things that people always kind of do poorly on is meal timing. Now, we have podcasts about any of this. So if I'm talking about any of this and it interests you and you want to learn more about any specific topic, just email me or shoot me a any kind of quick message on Instagram saying what the topic is that you'd want to learn more about, and I'll send you a direct link for a podcast for it. But what we want to think of when we look at food is, if I eat stuff that's quick and easy and it digests too soon, too quickly before my next meal, then I typically am going to have more cravings later in the day, and you'll actually have higher degrees of water retention. So this is one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of people having protein shakes as meals. So if you have liquid calories, the body does not have to work very hard to process those. So if we eat something that's very complex, and that could be like a big steak. So a big steak, the body has to work really freaking hard to break that down to get the protein out of it. If we eat something complex in carbohydrates, for example, like a bagel, our body has to tear the bagel bits, like the bagel down, into and convert it into glucose. So that's what carbohydrates convert into for energy, is glucose. So there are other forms of sugar, like such as fructose from fruit, galactose from milk. I understand all that stuff, but in general, we're getting it down to glucose-ish. So stay with me in the broad scheme of this. So if we get carbohydrates down to glucose, then we can use it for energy. If our body has to go through a process of taking that food to the fuel source that it needs. So, for example, fats go to ketones, proteins go to amino acids, carbohydrates go to glucose. If our body has to break the food down to get it to there, it has to do work. That means it's going to take some time for the body to do that. It has to invest calories. So we actually have to invest calories to get calories. So that's called thermic effect of food, how many calories we burn to get the calories that we need from the food that we eat. If I eat foods that are more complex throughout the day, I will actually have longer lasting kind of feelings of energy. I'll have more steady energy throughout the day rather than big spikes and drops. And along with those more steady energy, along with not having big spikes and drops, I'm going to have lower water retention. I'm going to have lower mood fluctuations, lower craving fluctuations. So I won't get to the end of the day and feel like I want to eat everything in the house and punch everybody in the face. So it's going to help you do much better in terms of how you feel throughout the day, not only in your aesthetics and how you look, but also just your quality of life, having foods that are more complex. So there are, in the world of carbohydrates, there are things called simple carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates. And what that refers to is basically simple carbohydrates are carbohydrates that are already in like sugar form. They're already in like glucose form. That's candies, liquids. Like Gatorade, for example, like fruit, things like that. Fruit is already in fructose. The body doesn't have to work very hard to get the sugar source that it needs from fruit because the fruit is already easily broken down. Now, there's some fruit that's more complex than other fruit, but in general, fruit in itself is less complex than something like, say, quinoa, which is a weird, horrible-tasting type of rice. So, but it's a very complex source of carbohydrates. So we want to focus on as much as we can more heartier, denser, more natural ways of getting calories. Now, there are lists that are available. You can email us at birdlionandjim@gmail.com, and I'll send you that list. What you can look for is basically digestion rates of foods. So they have the glycemic index is kind of a one that you can look at in relation to carbohydrates. But there's also a concept called glycemic load, which means like a blueberry may digest really quickly, but one blueberry is so few of calories, who gives a crap? So you have to balance glycemic index and glycemic load in regards to what would be the best carbohydrate source. It has to be fast or slow, but also a lot or not. So the volume matters. So, hey Josh. So somebody just said hello to me. So that's basically what we're looking for in our foods is can I eat something that takes a while to break down? And the more foods we focus on that take longer to break down, the better we're going to feel, the better we're going to look, just overall better quality of life. So an example of this would be as if I had a protein shake in the morning. And maybe I put like fruits and vegetables and crap in it because you want to get the vitamins and minerals. So that's all liquid. It's all going to process very quickly. You're going to be hungry again very quickly. Whereas if you were to have like, say, eggs and a bagel. And oh no, I just told you to have a bagel. Oh no, carbohydrates. There's nothing wrong with carbohydrates. So just if you eat too many of them, that's the problem. And we actually just had a podcast recently where I talked about manipulating carbohydrates and sodium manipulates body water retention, therefore changes weight. So too often people blame carbohydrates for making them fat, when actually if you eat carbohydrates, you gain more water retention, therefore you weigh more. Doesn't mean you got fat. But if we eat breakfast and we eat a meal that has longer digesting, we feel better. So eggs and a bagel is actually a better breakfast than a protein shake with fruits and vegetables blended into it. Then if somebody says, well, what about my vitamins and minerals? Take a multivitamin supplement. So the company Now Foods, N-O-W Foods, has great one. And I actually take their male version, which is called Adam. And there's a female one called Eve. Pretty good naming right there. That's great. You can get a lot of, pretty much everything you eat has vitamins and minerals. I don't know why people think fruit and vegetables are like the most amazing thing in the world. So if you eat food, you're getting vitamins and minerals. But if you want to get a balance of them, a multivitamin is a great idea. So you can do eggs and a bagel and a multivitamin. And that's actually a better meal than protein shake and vegetables and fruits mixed up together. So that's something to think of is the food more complex? So first of all, liquid calories is not as useful as calories that are in a more solid food form. So that's actually what we'd be wanting to eat is calories in a more solid food form. And that's going to give us much better kind of energy throughout the day. And it's going to give us a better emotional feel, all those things. So that's a little tidbit, something that came up with a client of mine. And we actually went through her foods and I told her which foods were like kind of what digestion rates. So that is something I know. Is I know the digestion rates of all the foods. So somebody has like white fish versus chicken breast versus, you know, a hamburger. I know the digestion rate differences of all that stuff. So the benefit of my clients is I can go through that with them and tell them good choice, bad choice, or what's a better choice. So if you're looking for that on your own, you can look through glycemic index, and that will tell you digestion rates, and you can kind of analyze that on your own. You can also email us, birdlionandjim@gmail.com, and I'll send you a chart or something like that. But that's something to consider and something I think is interesting. Cool. Okay, so I'm going to keep going. Again, if anybody has any questions or anybody wants to throw anything out there, you're welcome to. Looks like we have about 5 more minutes or so. So typically I've been wanting to keep these around 40 minutes as I think that's somewhat digestible. I think 20 minutes is almost too quick, especially because I like to yap and talk a lot, whereas an hour is a little too long. So 40 minutes is what I'm going to stay around. So if anybody has any questions, you want to throw one out there, you're welcome to. Looking through the other list that I had here of things, is I had somebody ask me about how to substitute an exercise. So they go to a commercial gym, and they are supposed to superset a hamstring curl with a leg extension. And they said, hey, the gym only has one leg extension. It's kind of hard for me to get both machines at one time. What can I do as a substitute for the leg extension? Well, here's some things to consider. And I'm going to email this person a direct answer because they're a client of mine. So if they're listening to this, you will get a direct answer. But I thought it was a really good concept to discuss as well. Is number one, we want to think of what is the target of the exercise? What's the main muscle target, whether it's a singular muscle or multiple muscles? So a leg extension, for example, is quadriceps. So you're trying to target the front of your legs. So whatever we would select to replace leg extension should target the front of our legs. I know that makes sense, but too often people do not actually do this correctly. So it's important that we understand that. Bodybuilding.com has an exercise guide list that is created by Body Part. So that's actually a really cool resource you can check out, is go to bodybuilding.com, and then you can click on their muscle man chart and click on quadriceps, and it'll show you all the exercises that target the quadriceps. So if you're doing this on your own and you know you're substituting something that targets quadriceps, man, what else targets quadriceps? Go to bodybuilding.com and they have that resource for you. The other thing we want to consider is what is the purpose of the exercise we're doing? So this client, for example, they have the purpose of the quadriceps, like leg extensions, is to get muscle damage. So they're not trying to be explosive. We're not trying to make them like an athlete with this exercise. So I am trying to make them feel athletic, but not on leg extensions. So for example, somebody might argue that box jumps uses your quadriceps, which is true. But box jumps is not really a good substitute for leg extensions because box jumps are explosive. That builds explosive power. It does not create a lot of muscle damage. So even though they both target quadriceps, they're not equal exercises. So we have to not only consider what's being targeted, we have to consider what is the purpose of what we're doing it for. Then the other thing we want to consider is what is the collateral damage? What else is being involved? So, for example, leg extensions is quadriceps only. There's really no lower back involved. There's really no hamstrings or glutes. There's really nothing else involved. It's just leg extensions, just quadriceps. So if they're thinking, okay, well, quadriceps works quads, but front squats works quads as well, so I'm just going to do front squats. No! So that is not the same. So front squats involve enormous amount of postural stability and postural effects. So it targets your upper back, your lower back, uses your glutes, uses your hamstrings, uses all the muscles in your core. So front squats is not an appropriate substitute for leg extensions because of how different they are in what else is involved. So when we want to think of an exercise substitute, we want to consider what is it targeting, what is the purpose of what I'm doing, and then what are the collateral damage. Good stuff. Okay, thank you. Glad you find it helpful. So those are the three things we want to look at. If we consider those three things well, and we pick based on those three things, we will find substitutes that are very similar, and it's probably going to be a good match. So one of the exercises that I use in commercial gyms with clients is, if they can't get a leg extension, we'll do heels elevated. So they have to put their heels on like a 45-pound plate, and they'll do narrow stance, toes straight, bodyweight squats. And sometimes I'll have them hold like a kettlebell or dumbbell or like a plate, but it's usually nothing more than like 20, 30 pounds. So it doesn't get a lot of postural challenge. But by having the heels elevated, it actually emphasizes a more uprighted posture while they're squatting, which it automatically makes their knees go more forward. So that actually places more stress in the quadricep down by the knee, which is exactly what a leg extension does. So you can stress the quadriceps up by the hip or down by the knee. So a leg extension emphasizes quads down by the knee, just like a heels elevated goblet hold, front loaded hold squat does. And again, if you're narrow stance, feet straight. If you're super wide stance and toes out, you're actually working your adductors and hamstrings more than your quadriceps, so it does have to be narrow, toes straight. So those are some things to ask ourselves if we're looking for an exercise substitute. What is the target, what's the purpose, and what's the collateral damage? What else is involved? Cool. So hopefully this was helpful. I yapped for 40 minutes, so I hope there was something helpful in here, some good information. And thank you for those who checked out the Instagram Live, and thank you to those who will be listening to the podcast. Again, I hope access to information is going to be a great way for you to get what you need. I truly, sincerely appreciate everybody who supports me in my business and my journey of trying to help others. I've had such a positive effect in my emotional, mental, spiritual, relational, everything in health due to the positive effects of physical health. And I would love to give that back to other people. So thank you for those who check in with us and support us. And I hope that through the support you're giving us, that you're getting equal in return. Cool. So thank you. If anybody ever wants to send in questions, you're welcome to. We'll either answer them on the Instagram live session or we'll answer them in podcasts. But I'll make sure no matter what, you get your answer. Okay. So thank you, everybody, on Instagram live for checking in. I sincerely appreciate it. And I hope it was helpful. And I will see you next week. Thank you very much. Okay, now, everybody on podcast, thank you for checking in. I hope this was helpful. If you think the podcast like this is helpful, we'll do it more often. Just let me know. Shoot us an email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. I appreciate you checking in, and I thought this would be a great way for trainers specifically to get a wide variety of information, but also just to kind of, again, like I said, see a way in which you can reach out to others and provide knowledge. The more you can show what you know, the more people will hire you for what you know. So they don't know what they don't know. So you got to get on there and tell them what they don't know and also tell them what you know so they know what you know. Cool. Okay, if you think this podcast is helpful in any way whatsoever, please, please, please share it with people in your life. Share it with friends, share it with family, share it with anybody that you want to have a better quality of life. You can share it on social media, you can share it via text, via email, however you want. Also, if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. You can tell us at our email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.